Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Odyssey Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. That's Chris Biederman. He covers the 49ers, among other things, for a prominent newspaper in Northern California. And we have training camp to get ready for. We're recording this July 13th, and 2 weeks... 13 days inside of 2 weeks until the 49ers open training camp. And we have the top questions leading into training camp. But before we do that, Chris, there's no question about the official clothing brand of this podcast. It's Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website. Promo code Candlestick20 to receive 20% off your order. That summer 2026 line is out now. A couple new pairs of shorts. Check them out at SGLambChops.com. Lamb Chops, join the herd. Okay. Burning questions for the 49ers leading into training camp. Here we go.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
All right, we've never been more back. And Chris, it's like we... Some are saying it's like we never left. Because I did a pod last week about... a few things, but one of them was about the 49ers rookie under the most pressure. And somebody I had seen said DeJon Stribling's under the most pressure. And I really disagreed with that. And I thought it's Kalen Black. And I went about it in a whole way. But you had a different kind of angle on that. And that's where we'll start our burning training camp questions. And we'll start with the 49ers top overall pick in this year's draft.
Yeah, for me, when I look at DeJon Stribling, you know, like I just in general don't have high expectations for rookie receivers, particularly in Kyle Shanahan's offense. And if he's more than a third receiver this year, I think that's, you know, much higher. That's like an outcome that's way above expectations, at least for me going into the season. I think when you look at the receiving core, aside from just like the general health and durability questions around Mike Evans, like I think it's Ricky Pearsall. Like Ricky Pearsall is the guy maybe on the whole offense that has more pressure on him than anybody not named Brock Purdy. And I think the fact that they did draft Stribling, the fact that Pearsall is going to be up for a new contract starting next offseason, the fact that, you know, they're kind of banking on him to be like a not a number one receiver, because that's going to be Evans, but like the expectation for Pearsall has to be something close to 80 catches and 1,000 yards, right? Like that's me is where the expectations are for Pearsall. And he's shown that he can be that type of receiver in spurts, but there's always the durability questions with him. And so when I look at Stribling, I'm like, all right, how can I expect DeJon Stribling to enter the season with a ton of pressure when he's like very clearly the fourth wide receiver on the depth chart right now? Right. And maybe you can quibble and say, you know, well, Christian Kirk isn't exactly like the bona fide number three. And I'd hear that argument. But for me, it's like DeJon Stribling going into the season is the number four receiver. And, you know, there's a good chance he gets a bunch of playing time and maybe that increases the pressure that's on him. But to me, it's like, the pressure on him is to learn the offense, not be out of place when he gets on the field, not be, you know, not be Juwan Jennings and be Mr. Reliable on third and seven and in the red zone. Like, no, he just needs to like come in, block his ass off, which I think he's going to do, and then develop into somebody who can start and potentially replace Mike Evans whenever Mike Evans leaves. Like that to me is why there isn't a ton of pressure on Stribling this year, just because it's really hard for me to have expectations on a rookie receiver in Kyle Shanahan's offense, because we've seen how difficult it can be for those guys to transition to become good players, particularly when you already have Mike Evans on the field.
is it fair to say the expectation for Dejon Stribling is wide receiver 3? Like, is that the, if he's wide receiver 4, is it another like, oh man, Niner swung and missed at a day 2 receiver?
If he's not getting a second contract and he's never starting over, you know, the first 3-4 years of his career, then I'd say it's a swing and miss. But I just don't, it's unless there's like, it would be a disappointment if Mike Evans got hurt, Ricky Pearsall's hurt, Christian Kirk's hurt, whatever, which sure. could happen, and Stribling is forced into a starting role. And if he's just way over his skis and not a productive player in that role, then yeah, that would be disappointing. But I'm not looking at it going into training camp that like, okay, this guy needs to be an 80 catch, 1,000 yard guy. To me, that's Pearsall. And that's what they drafted Pearsall to be. And now Pearsall's in his third season. Like, this should be the time when Ricky Pearsall really takes the leap, because barring any more training camp injuries, like, he doesn't have any reason not to, because he has a really good receiver opposite him. George Kittle's going to be back at some point early in the season, if not week one. Like, everything is shaping up for Ricky Pearsall to be in a really good spot. And so a good training camp for him, staying healthy, should mean that he's a really, really productive receiver, because there are so many other weapons elsewhere that are going to get more attention than he does. So from that standpoint, I don't know where Stribling, like, how you can really go into the season being like, Niners got to get a ton from Stribling, unless, of course, and this is a caveat with everything, there are other injuries elsewhere.
Sure. I sidebar here real quick. Are we certain Christian Kirk is making the team?
I mean, I guess not.
2.8 million guaranteed.
Yeah, I would be pretty stunned if he didn't make the team.
Okay.
And I think there's probably a scenario where like Christian Kirk and Dejon Stribling are getting a very similar number of snaps.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think is gonna happen.
They just have very different roles.
So that's sort of what I brought up in the last pod. I don't have an expectation really for Stribling from a like yards or catches standpoint. I think that's gonna kind of ebb and flow. And like you said, it's really health dependent. With the two guys in front of him, if he's splitting snaps ostensibly with Christian Kirk, I think that's a win. Like, I think that's a huge win. I just don't think you can be in a situation where it's Jordan Watkins or Jacob Cowing where that player is just not, he's just not on the field. Like that, but he's your second round pick, and he's just, oh yeah, no, that guy's a healthy scratch on game days.
Yeah, that would be disappointing.
That cannot be a thing. He has to be, and I think you're probably right there, where some kind of split with Christian Kirk is probably, I think, the most realistic outcome.
I was talking to a 49ers player this last week about Stribling in particular, and just like what his first impressions were. He was like, at practice, and again, this is the off-season program, no pads, like, it's take it with a grain of salt. But it really stood out to me. It's like, this dude is blocking defensive ends. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing those seal blocks on defensive ends on outside zone plays, and like doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, Nick Bosa is not practicing. Michael Williams isn't practicing. You know, this might be like Sam Okwuanu. Still, for like a receiver to be doing that and standing out in a way, and this is like a veteran player. This isn't like, you know, someone's first offseason program. Like, The context here is that this guy, I think, has a pretty good eye for like what works and what doesn't. And he's just like, the way Stribling's blocking in like defensive ends in the spring has been kind of wild and eye opening. So that to me is, you know, we heard about that after the Niners drafted him, but like, I'm very curious to see how this looks.
So I'm either going to enhance your point or I don't know exactly, but that's what Kyle Juszczyk said on, I think he was talking to Matt Maiocco.
Mm.
He pointed out that specifically, how he was just ready to go stick his face in and go block. And the fact that that's jumping out to somebody like Kyle Juszczyk, who's been around and who's seen everything in this offense and who's seen all the different iterations of this offense, I think that's meaningful. And that's the kind of thing when it comes to like what's going to get Dejon Stribling on the field. It's like that. That more than what he does as a pass catcher if he can be a vertical threat outside, but then also come down and do the dirty work as a blocker, like those are the things I think you're not getting from Jacob Cowing. You're not getting that from Jordan Watkins.
Right.
And that's where I think if Dejon Stribling's already thriving at those things, then I feel pretty good about the direction he's heading going into camp.
I also think, I mean, you mentioned like he's got to be on the field and active on game day, even if he's not getting a ton of snaps. Like, given his physicality and his size and speed, like he should be a really good special teams player. Like he should be flying down on, you know, punt coverage and kickoff coverage and stuff like that. That to me, if he's not one of your top three receivers consistently early in the season, given the skill set, it's like this dude better be thriving on special teams, or else it might be a scenario where he's not up on game day. And if, you know, if Jordan Watkins is returning punts or Jacob, you know, like one of those guys are like an actual important player on special teams, like those guys are going to be up ahead, like ahead of him.
Yeah.
And so one thing that I think we should probably pay attention to in preseason is like, what's it look like with Stribling on special teams? Because that could be telling.
It would also make sense that that's why he was their first pick. If our guy Brant Boyer is making the picks, got to get that special teams ace on the roster, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have another training camp question related to this conversation. Mm-hmm. Sticking in the wide receiver room. Make or break year for Ricky Pearsall?
Yeah, probably. I mean,
it feels
like
it to me, man.
I'm not like big hyperbole guy, but like if he doesn't have a great season and it's another like injury riddled season, and it's a knee, then like the questions will be there, and it's hard to imagine one the Niners. Like if Ricky Pearsall has the same season this year as he had last year, the Niners are not picking up his fifth year option, I don't think, in the offseason. And then he's going into year four, a contract year, and they probably take another receiver in the first 2 days of the draft again to add to the mix and compete directly with Ricky Pearsall, because Stribling will probably be elevating in the Mike Evans role if Evans is only around for 1 year, right? So from that standpoint, like, I mean, I don't think the 49ers are sold on Ricky Pearsall right now. So from that standpoint, like, yeah, if Ricky Pearsall doesn't show that he's like a worthy of a late first round pick and like going to be a starter and a good number two receiver, then I would absolutely expect the 49ers to keep investing valuable assets at the position, which probably means that Pearsall would be on the roster bubble going into next year. So yeah, if that's make or break, then I think it is.
His 17 game totals from last season were 68 catches for 1,000 yards.
Paced
when
out.
He's played, he's been, yeah, paced out. Yeah, paced out. When he plays, he's been really good. And that's where I think in a typical, like, Jacob Cowing, make or break year for Jacob Cowing. Yeah, man, it's year three and he hasn't played significant snaps and he didn't play at all last year. The team kept him on IR on purpose. Like, it's over if you don't figure it out now. But with Pearsall, I'm a little bit more hesitant because when he's played, he's been really damn good.
I know.
And good enough that I think if you're the Niners, you give him a little bit of additional leeway when it comes to maybe they don't pick up his fifth year option because that could be really expensive. But after year three, let's say this year he plays 12 games and is about as productive as he's been in his career. Is it a Dre Greenlaw situation where they try and extend him at like a really low number? Because that could wind up being a bargain if he does stay healthy and all of a sudden now you have this 1200 yard receiver who's making $12 million.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Yeah, it's a good question. And the other question with him, and it's not like, you know, like he didn't play in the Eagles playoff game. He came back, no catches, 2 targets. I know he was dealing with a knee injury late in the season. Some players just aren't good at dealing with injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
For sure.
Like, and it's not to say, you know, like, it's not to call out his toughness or anything like that. Just like some guys can play hurt and some guys can't. And I think it's fair to wonder if Ricky Pearsall's a guy that like just can't play banged up.
You're calling
and
him
I
soft?
Think that I'm not calling him soft. This is not a mentality thing. I'm not saying he doesn't want to play hurt. It's just, can you not? And that's the question.
Sure.
At least for me, speaking for myself. And I don't, again, like didn't play in the Eagles playoff game, 2 targets against the Seahawks. Like the 49ers obviously needed more from him. They needed week one Ricky Pearsall, not,
yeah,
you know, divisional round Ricky Pearsall.
But I mean, that's just, I mean, 4 for 108, 4 for 56, 8 for 117, 4 for 46 in the game he got hurt against Jacksonville. Missed 6 weeks, comes back. 1 catch, no yards, 2 catch, 6 yards, 2 catches, 14 yards, and then 6 for 96, 5 for 85, and then got hurt again and didn't play week 18.
Do you remember, I forget what year it was, the Packers came, I think it might have been the season opener. Packers came to Levi's on prime time and they won. Davante Adams got like leveled in the middle of the field in the second half, and it's like, oh, he might need like a stretcher and like isn't coming back to this game. And then just like came back and balled out in the fourth quarter and helped the Packers win.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that game?
3-20-21?
Something like that. Like that's the other side of the spectrum, like the extreme version of like, oh, this dude, we thought he was like gonna get carted off the field and taken to the hospital. Right. But then he came back and just balled out. Like that's what I'm talking about. Like playing, like Davante Adams can play through injuries. He might not have the same speed, but he can like play at a high level despite being banged up. We haven't seen that from Ricky Pearsall.
It's every game Puka Nacua has ever played in the NFL.
Right. Exactly.
He peels himself off the turf after every time he gets hit.
Right.
Yeah, man. It's going to be an interesting question. I think it's interesting mostly because Ricky Pearsall is really good at football.
Yeah. I think he's good. I think he's really good. It's just, can you be good for 17 weeks?
Yeah. The other question, and I think this is a big one, and I think this is one a lot of people are asking, and it's one that has been danced around or either directly addressed kind of throughout the offseason, and it's still in the receiver room, sort of. Is Brandon Ayuk, because I've said this and I've stayed here on this for since his social media posting started, because there was some, I saw some sentiment from fans saying like, look, tired of this. I don't want it to affect the team. They should just cut him. And I don't think anything Brandon Ayuk does on social media is going to have any kind of dramatic impact on the 49ers. Like this is a team in a locker room with a very good culture and a very sound culture. And I don't think that whatever the hell is going on with Brandon Ayuk is something that's going to bleed into the offseason or the preseason in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
I think it's there. I think it'll be interesting on report date if he reports, But outside of that, like, I don't think anyone's going to be asking about it. Or at least not at any length.
I think beyond. So what happens in training camp is the key players kind of do like a media car wash early on, and then, you know, answer all the off-season questions, whatever.
Can you define media car wash real quick? Because it's not a literal car wash.
It's not a literal car wash. It's just they bring the players in for scrums. They answer questions. And it's usually like a lot of the star players will do like the first couple days of media availability. Some will take longer depending on injuries. Maybe someone has an awesome practice and then the PR staff will get him to the media afterwards. Point being, I think it's going to be a discussion, or it'll be asked about to the main guys, like their very first media obligations in, you know, late July, early August, like first week or two of camp. And then they're just going to like say, yeah, it's not really a topic. And then if they get asked again, they'll repeat the same thing. And eventually it'll just die down from like a conversation and narrative perspective, unless there's new development stuff. To me, man, I just like, I don't know what Brandon Ayuk's doing.
Not either.
And I worry about Brandon Ayuk, the person, because, you know, what he said, like, about the Niners, what he wrote saying that the Niners made it look like they didn't make the decision in July or something like that. It was like, no, when, first of all, the Niners didn't say anything. The Niners didn't say anything until Mike Silver reported it in November that they voided his guarantees in July. And then Kyle Shanahan said, yeah, that was a decision we made in July. And so for Brandon Ayuk to accuse the Niners and portraying it like a certain way to the media and the fan base that they made that decision in November, like, no, that's just how the news cycle worked in that moment. Like, Michael Silver reported something that happened, you know, 4 or 5 months earlier, whenever it was. So I don't know, man. It's just all really troubling. And all he needs to do is file for reinstatement. And if he's unwilling to do that, it doesn't really seem like he is really willing to do what it takes to play in the NFL again. So it's just hard for me to take anything he's saying on social media seriously. And even, you know, I've seen a lot of Commanders fans on social media chime in and think Brandon Ayuk is somehow in the right here. Like, I don't know. This isn't something NFL players do when their careers is on the up and up. Like, these aren't the types of things that you see for ascending players. So that's kind of it on that.
Yeah, man. I've spoken a lot about this. I feel sad for him more than anything.
Yeah. I hope he's okay. If he
salvages an NFL career, awesome. If not, I hope, like I said, I hope he's all right.
And that's kinda, I hope people are trying to help him, and I hope he's accepting of the idea of help. That's what I would say. Yeah.
I think we would be remiss talking about 49ers burning questions going into training camp. This is non-position battles edition, by the way. We'll do position battles and we'll go through that in a separate podcast.
Sure.
But I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the injury situation the 49ers are currently dealing with. And one of the ones we'll start on the defensive side that I think is probably the biggest question mark is what the hell's going on with Nick Bosa's knee and how does he look a little bit less than a year removed from a third torn ACL.
So I'm of a couple different minds about this. Like, do we need Nick Bosa to, like, have an awesome training camp? Or can we just be like, hey, Nick, put it in bubble wrap until, like, late October, and then we'll really start caring about how you look in November and December? And that's not to say he won't play football before that, but, like, the same with George Kittle. Like, if I'm the 49ers, I'm much more concerned about George Kittle and being 100% in November and December than, like, hey, why aren't you practicing in the second week of training camp? What's up?
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and even, you know, George Kittle is, it seems like he's trending, like he's going to be back early in the season. There's some discussion about week one in Australia. I'm still very dubious of that, particularly with the flight. But I think the optimism is warranted, at least with the fact that like George Kittle's running around at tight end university. And apparently he told Juszczyk that he reached 16 miles an hour on the tracking data, which is pretty fast, being what, 5-6 months removed from tearing your
that's
Achilles.
Crazy.
So like when it comes to the injured guys, like sure, like what do they look like early in training camp? That's certainly a discussion. But like for me, it's like, can you just tread water until you really need to make your push? Because I think the schedule is a lot more difficult late in the season than it is than it is early on. And that's when I want the guys, you know, that's when I would want the guys being, you know, 100% of maximum capacity in comparison to August.
I don't disagree. I do think though that getting Nick Bosa on the field for some amount of training camp is probably important. Even if you have him in camp and you put him on IR out of the gate and have him miss four games just to make sure he's good to go. But I think it's important to have something instead of just saying, hey, you're on the PUP list and you're just going to stay on PUP and we're going to keep you there to start the year. So you're going to miss four games and then you come back week five and just, hey, make sure you're ramped up. Like, I think that ramp up period has to start in camp. If he can. I don't know exactly where he is in the recovery process, but for me, that's the bigger thing is if Nick Bosa doesn't participate in camp at all, that makes me a little bit more worried about what he looks like long-term this season.
So a question I would have, like, do you think where the 49ers are at just as a team that they need Nick Bosa playing 40 snaps, whatever, you know, 80% of the snaps week one versus like coming off an ACL early in September, you're going to be playing, you know, some key third downs and you'll probably get like 20-25 snaps while we ramp you up. Like, can the 49ers be in a position to ramp guys up that they need to ramp up so they are 100% in November, December? Or do they not have the margin for error and do they need to rely heavily on these dudes early in the season?
Well, oddly enough, it depends a little bit on how Michael Williams' knee is doing for me. I don't think you need to rely heavily on Nick Bosa where he's playing 80-90% of the snaps out of the gate. But at the same time, even if the plan is, all right, he's going to play 20... He's going to play 18-25 snaps. I would way rather him have a few weeks of camp under his belt.
Oh yeah.
And doing that than just, okay, yeah, hey, he didn't have any camp, but we're going to activate him off PUP for the first week of practice. He's going to get these practices in Melbourne, and then he's just going to get on the field for 18 snaps. Like, that makes me nervous.
Sure.
And now you run into a similar issue that you ran into when he held out up until the first week of the season, and he really struggled and didn't look like Nick Bosa for the first 6 weeks, and never really got his footing that season at all.
Yeah.
So I don't on the defensive line, I don't want to sit here and say like, yeah, they got the margin for error to just not have Nick Bosa on the field, because they don't. But at the same time, to your point, if not having Nick Bosa for more than 25 snaps a game for the first 3 or 4 weeks means you're going to have a better, healthier version of Nick Bosa in December, then yeah, that's a sacrifice I'm making very easily.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I guess like the point of my question too was kind of with the idea, like, yeah, obviously if Nick Bosa is not in training camp and not doing things, that's kind of a separate discussion. Like,
sure.
I think the ideal scenario, getting Nick Bosa on the field in practice throughout training camp in August and like doing the things that he needs to do to get ready and then holding him back a little bit. Like, I don't know if this is necessarily a criticism of the 49ers or the reason why they've dealt with injuries and such. It seems like more than any other team in the league the last few years, but like, I think they should have a willingness to say, yeah, sure, we could push Nick Bosa to play 45 snaps today, but it might just be smart to play him 20. Like, and he'll just play all the third downs and, you know, the key plays that that he has to be on the field. But it's not going to be like, oh, Nick's out there, so Nick's going to be available to play, like they've treated a lot of their stars and or Christian McCaffrey, you know, the last few years. Like, just saying, no, if you're healthy, you're playing an obscene amount of snaps, and that's just the way it is. Like, I think it would behoove them to think much more long term. And I know it's tough. It's the NFL. There are only 17 games. You need to win every one. You got to make the playoffs. But like, I wonder if you start to see teams, and I think you probably should start to see teams take an NBA like approach. And, you know, I don't want to say load manage, but like, can you just limit their snaps and their exposure to injury early in the season so they could be better off in the long run? You know, we'll see. I think it's a tough, it's easy for me to say, right? But I do think that the 49ers should consider doing that given what the second half of their season looks like.
Yeah.
And obviously you don't want to do it too much to fall behind the eight ball, but like, I don't know. I would be very leery of just like, all right, Nick Bosa is healthy. It was his second ACL tear, but he's healthy, so he's going to play 90% of the snaps. Like it, like, because he's out there. Like, no, I think a ramp up would be really smart.
I have another question about the defensive line, but before we do that, let's talk about our friends over at Lamb Chops.
SGLambChops.com is the website.
Nice.
Their summer line is out. Couple new pairs of shorts. Craig and Jordan still waiting on these. Need them real bad. The Dia de los Muertos shorts
are fire.
Really, really cool. And yeah, I need them. And also, if you throw a Candlestick in the search bar, the Candlestick Chronicles merch, I'm wearing the t-shirt right now, is available, and it's great. The hoodie I will be wearing a ton when it's not 95 degrees like it is today in Sacramento. But yeah, the Candlestick Chronicles merch is great. Just throw Candlestick in the search bar at sglambchops.com and you'll find it all there. And it's great stuff. Shout out to those guys.
You mentioned it's 95 degrees out.
Mm-hmm.
Means we're beating the heat.
We're trying.
Locked in.
We're trying. I'm beating the heat with my Lamb Chop shorts. Different nice. Collection, but wearing some Lamb Chop shorts to go with my Lamb Chops tee as we record, as we speak.
Nice, dude.
Yeah.
Shout out to Lamb Chops.
Shout out.
All right, I have another question about the Niners defensive line.
Okay.
And this relates a little bit to the Nick Bosa. How much should he play out of the gate? Do you ramp him up? What does it look like? Conversation. Did they do enough on the defensive line this offseason? They traded for Osa Digizoa. They drafted Romello Height. And they signed Cam Sample. And re-signed Sam Okwuonu. Don't sleep. You get year two of Alfred Collins. You get year two of CJ West.
Great. I don't think Grayson Halton should be overlooked here.
Okay.
Grayson Halton.
Did they do enough where if Nick Bosa for the first 4 weeks is limited to 18 to 25 snaps, that it's not going to be a total disaster?
I think they could avoid disaster. Like, I don't know that it's going to be like a plus pass rush, but they could be talented enough to be way more competent than they were last year if Nick Bosa is just playing 20 snaps. Like, the thing for me is, like, can Nick Bosa just be on the field when it's third and six and longer, right?
Sure,
like
right.
That's, you know, you're talking about probably 10, 15 snaps just like in those situations. So you're counting heavily on the development of the interior guys you drafted last year in Collins and West, right? Like, that's a big part of this. I think the success of the defensive line is directly tied to the development of those guys. That said, I think Osa Digizu is a really, really good upgrade for them. And I think he fits the way they want to play. I think he's super productive. And I think he addresses a glaring need that they haven't had you know, they haven't had a guy like that in since, you know, Javon Hargrave's first season when he came over. So I think that is potentially a really big difference maker for them. So yeah, if you're glass half full and you're in on Alfred West and CJ Collins development, then I think, yes, you could survive a scenario where you're doing the ramp up like we talked about with Nick Bosa. I don't know how optimistic I am about those guys. Like, sure, there's a world where Alfred Collins turns into a Pro Bowler. Like that wouldn't be super stunning to me. But I think counting on both those guys to be like really great rotational defensive linemen, like, I'm just not totally there yet with those guys. I need to see it, but I think it's possible. But I want to reiterate, I think Grayson Halton might be one of their best draft picks that they made. I just want to say that it's July 13th. I think there's a chance that Grayson Halton comes in and could even leapfrog CJ West and potentially Alfred Collins, like, in the long run. I think I'm in on Halton so far.
Yeah. You're ready to put your Grayson Halton takes on wax.
Yeah. They're on wax on YouTube. Whatever that is.
I'd be pretty floored if Alfred Collins was a Pro Bowler. I'd be very, very surprised. I don't know that he's going to do enough as a pass rusher to ever kind of garner that kind of attention. But anyways, that's a separate question. Yeah, I don't like their defensive line was so bad last year. It was so, so bad. They couldn't stop the run. A quarterback pressure felt like a miracle. Oh, don't forget Keon White. I forgot about Keon White. But it, like, any quarterback pressure felt like a minor miracle. I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think their floor has been raised quite a bit. I just don't know what their ceiling looks like. Unless Romello Height is awesome and Keon White in year two under the 49ers coaching staff kind of takes a mini leap and Nick Bosa is really effective when he is on the field. And Grayson Halton's an awesome player out of the gate. Like, okay, then maybe that ceiling starts to tick up a little bit. But I think the bigger deal until Nick Bosa is fully healthy and Mykal Williams is healthy and back in the mix is just can you raise that floor from absolutely putrid to something a little bit closer to league average?
Yeah.
And that's I think, where I don't expect the 49ers to be dominant on the defensive line necessarily. But I think the bar is so low for them right now that just getting up to that league average range would be a pretty big win.
I think Romello Height is one of the most interesting players on the roster and probably like one of the biggest pivot points.
Yeah.
Because if Romello Height is good from the jump, then I feel a whole lot better about the 49ers defensive line. Just like full stop.
Sure.
If Romello Height is like not that good and kind of like they're talking about it, like, well, he's still got some developing to do. It's like, this guy's like, how old is he? He spent 6 years in college and
he's 30.
Like that's probably the biggest critique of the pick is
he is 25.
He's 25. So does he have more developing to do, or did he peak in his last year at college? And how much higher is his ceiling compared to where he's already at?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main critique the main issue people have when you draft players who are on the older side is, you know, do they have room to grow? And I'm very curious to know if Romello Height has room to grow or if he's already reached his potential. And if he's good for them, then that could potentially change a lot and just how we look at this defensive line. If he's not, then it's like, all right, you know, like Mykal Williams is not Mr. Speed Rush guy. Like, he's more the Eric Armstead set the edge pass rush from the inside on third down. Like, right. Sam Okwuanu is kind of your league average replacement level. maybe worse defensive end, right? Like your league average third or fourth defensive end. That's, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so Romello Height to me is kind of the pivot point. Like if he's good, you feel a lot better about the defensive line. And if he's not, then it's like, all right, they basically have to go get a pass rusher again at the trade deadline.
Yeah. I am a little concerned about their defensive end room feeling a little bit, Nick Bosa aside, feeling a little bit like the Golden State Warriors roster last year.
Sure.
Where it felt like a lot of like 7 through 10 guys playing 2 through 6 spots on the roster.
Sure.
Like that's a little bit what I'm afraid of. Like Sam Okwuonu is your second best defensive end when really he's probably better suited as like your fourth or fifth best defensive end. That's definitely a concern, but I do think we're going to learn that very early in camp. I will learn pretty quickly, is Romello Height going to be an impactful player or not? Is Grayson Halton an impact player or not? If CJ West and Alfred Collins taken a leap or not?
Yeah.
Like, I think we'll learn that really early on. And maybe at that point, the Niners do go out and try and sign Joey Bosa, or they do go try and trade for Max Crosby or whatever it is.
The Crosby thing would be wild.
Yeah, I'm picking a name.
Yeah, we'll see.
They just hold off, see 3 training camp practices with Romello Height leading the way, and they're like, fuck it, get Max.
Well, the good thing that the 49ers have going for them is they have 2 sets of joint practices, right, with the Titans and the Chargers in August. And the good thing about that is you can see, like, there's some positions where it's just really hard to evaluate in individual drills, right? Like, you know, when a linebacker has to cover running backs, a lot of times it's really hard to judge how good that linebacker is in coverage because the drill's just, like, so unfair, right? Like, even Fred Warner gets killed in some of these individual drills just because, you know, these guys can run option routes. They can utilize leverage. Like, it's really difficult to defend on air and there's nobody else on the field.
Right.
That's not true in the pass rushing drills, because when it's like one-on-one, a defensive end versus an offensive tackle, you can get a great idea of how good this guy is, you know, and they only do a handful of those reps per practice. But I think the 49ers will have plenty of opportunities to see, and even the media during the open practices will have plenty of opportunity to see, like, is Romello Height winning any of these battles against, you know, Titans offensive linemen? You know, obviously he's probably not going to beat Trent Williams a whole lot, and he might not even beat Colt McKivitz a whole lot. Maybe he will, but like you will have a very good idea of Romello Height, I think, in August, like how much juice he has.
If Romello Height is whooping Trent Williams' ass in one-on-ones, is that a story about Trent Williams or Romello Height?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Fair enough. I have one more burning question. Is George Kittle playing week 1? Like, is she just back?
I appreciate George's vigor and his optimism. And I think it would be just way too audacious. Like, I know it's the Rams, it's a divisional game. I just don't see it being worth the risk. Like, have we ever seen anybody come back this fast from an Achilles? Like, if he plays, we're talking middle of January, being back from a torn Achilles in September. Like, what, 8 months? Would be less than 8 months from an Achilles injury playing football? Like, I don't know, man. Like,
but it was higher up on the calf where there's more blood flow.
Sure, fine. And again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an orthopedist. I'm not even a physical therapist. Like, I would just be very leery of being on a plane for 15, 16 hours and your first game back from an Achilles tear is the scenario where you're like getting treatment on a flight. Like, who? I'm very curious. Someone, I hope Matt, this is like a Matt Barrow story for sure. Like, is there going to be like there's going to be like first class and then like business class? And then is it going to be all like training tables where guys are just like getting treatment during this flight? Like guys are getting massages and guys, you know, those like leg sleeves with are there going to be like hyperbaric chambers on the flight? Like I'm very curious to know what the flight is going to be like. But no, like, I'm sure George Kittle will push to play. I just think it would be crazy if he did.
I'm trying to look up how long is the flight from the Bay Area to 13 to 15 and a half hours to Australia.
It's insane that the NFL is doing this. First of all,
dog, it's so nuts.
It's so nuts.
It's like flying from Jacksonville to London twice.
It's
like, that's insane.
The other thing, and I was having this conversation with somebody who works for the team recently. I was like, well, you know, the Australia thing's really crazy, but at least you guys get three straight home games afterwards. And this person was like, well, we didn't really want three straight home games because now the second half of the schedule is like super road heavy.
Right.
So they have the world's most ridiculous road trip to open the season. Then sure, they have like three pretty favorable games with the exception of Denver. But then you go and you look at like four of their last six are on the road. And it's just all really tough games, at least on paper.
Here's how. Like, so
go ahead.
They go to Australia. They go home, home, home. Then road, home, road, home, road, home, but Mexico. Home.
Right.
Road, home, road, road. That's Chargers, Chiefs. Chargers on a Thursday night. Home, road. So three out of their last four, and one, two, three, four out of their last six are on the road.
So six out of their last 10 games are on the road, if you include the Mexico game, which is technically a home game.
Oof.
But you go at Dallas, Minnesota in Mexico City, Seattle at home, at New York, Rams at home, at Chargers, at Chiefs, Eagles at home, at Cardinals to end the season. So just pointing out, like, the other side, it's like, oh, well, they go to Australia, but yeah, they get to recover with three straight home games and they don't have to leave. And then you feel that on the back end of the schedule. And oh, by the way, you have a Mexico City game lumped in there too. Really great stuff by the NFL. It's going to be tons of fun. Really excited about all the money the owners are going to make from, you know, from these new markets. It's just going to make the product so much better. And yes, I know that players make money from this too. I get it. I just think this whole thing is wild. Anything else?
Yeah, sorry, I got an emergency text message. Okay.
Uh-oh.
We're good.
Everything okay?
Yeah. No, I did a fake emergency, not like actual emergency. Something needed to be responded to. I think we've got some good pre-training camp content lined up. We're recording this July 13th. 49ers rookies report in 5 days. The 49ers veterans report in 12 days. They start practice in 13 days. And we finally get to talk about football and this 49er season. That's exciting.
It's going to be great. This is going to be a fun season, I think.
I do too. I think that we can do a predictions pod later, but early prediction, I think their draft class is going to be finally like good against the consensus board. Like, I feel good about this draft class. Maybe
I think I do too. I don't know that there's, and yeah, we can talk about this later. I don't know that there's our stars in this class, but I feel like if you hit a lot of singles and doubles, then you could be okay, you know, better than striking out in the draft. Like, if you hit a lot of singles and doubles, then you can be okay. particularly in the Niners case, because they have such a good coach in Kyle Shanahan who can maximize what he has and utilize guys in very specific ways. So from that standpoint, I'm generally optimistic about the draft class, but I will say, I don't think there's like a star. Like, I don't know that there's like a future all pro.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm keeping my eye on Grayson Halton, man. I'm just telling you. Right. And like you know what? Intrigued by Enrique Cruz. Gonna say it. Intrigued.
Another pod that we can do pre-training camp is one word to describe each 49ers draft prospect. Bullish.
Maybe.
I'm bullish on Jaden Duggar.
just straddling the fence on some of these. Yeah, sure. Maybe.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
All right. Subscribe, rate, review.
That's it. Shout out our Roker.
That's our show for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Candlestick Chronicles is produced and edited by Mike Robbier. If you're not already doing so, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@Candlestick Chronicles Podcast. Candlestick Chronicles is an Odyssey production.